The disciples shuffled along the dusty road, kicking rocks in their frustration and cursing anything that got in their way. They ricocheted between different emotions, replaying the events of the last few days. How could this have happened? One disciple wondered aloud, still stunned. And how could we have fallen for all his big talk and fancy tricks? It was probably just sleight of hand anyways, the other muttered. And those women, oh, those foolish, hopeful women. He trailed off. Like the women, they too had seen the empty tomb, but without a visit from an angel, it only left them feeling more dejected. Not only had they crucified him, but now they had stolen his body too. And so here they were, having given up, returning home to face the likely jeers and I told you so's of their families. They were disappointed and they also felt guilty. They knew they had betrayed him, abandoned him, and they wondered if maybe the outcome would have been different if only they had acted a little more boldly. They were angry that Jesus had let it all happen, and distraught that these 3 days had passed, that his prophecy had not materialized, that he was really, truly dead. And perhaps more than anything, they were terrified. While most of the disciples hid out in Jerusalem, these two decided it would be safer to leave town altogether. It is in this wild mix of emotions that a very strange man joins them on their walk away from Jerusalem. Hearing their heated discussion and sensing their heightened emotions, he asks what they're talking about. "Have you been living under a rock?" they respond. "How could you have possibly missed the news?" This scene reminds me of the wild mix of emotions that has been swirling around us over the past week. But this time, it's about the death of a very, very different man. In the wake of Osama bin Laden's death, emotions have been running high, and like the disciples, it's hard to imagine someone having missed the news. The response was instantaneous. Some people poured out into the streets last Sunday night to celebrate the announcement, in jubilant mobs that looked a lot like the elation we saw after the Giants won the World Series. Some people have been more somber, reflecting on all the lives lost because of and in pursuit of this man. Our president tells us that justice has been done, while others ask if that is our job or if there could have been another way. As much as this world-stopping news has been painted in black and white, the reality is that there is a lot of gray, too. The supposed fight between good and evil is rarely as simple as we would like it to be. I confess that I too have found myself wrapped in a jumble of emotions this week as I try to make sense of bin Laden's execution. I cannot bring myself to joyfully celebrate this man's demise, but I do understand the sentiment of relief shared by so many. My brother John, who returned from his 5th tour as an Army Ranger in Iraq just a month ago, has been serving in the Middle East for most of the last 8 years. Though an incredibly complex situation, it seems that at least in part, bin Laden's actions took John away from us. Now, I obviously count myself among the lucky ones. After all, John has come home again. But that doesn't erase the trauma he experienced, nor does it undo the violence he was ordered to commit, nor does it bring back all the friends he lost at war. Any relief I feel is not the result of my political views on our military action, but instead is the consequence of my deep respect for the service of my brother and his friends. And yet, it's not that simple. Still, in the height of Easter season, we sing at the top of our lungs that God has triumphed over death. We shout for joy that Christ is risen as we gather to celebrate that death no longer has the final word. How can we simultaneously celebrate someone's death, even when we acknowledge how much pain, death, and terror that man caused? We need to recognize how complicated this death is. We need to embrace the ambiguity and hold the situation in tension, thoughtfully. Maybe the world is safer now, maybe it isn't. But regardless, Jesus does not teach us to be a people who celebrate death. He does not lead us to do justice by way of violence. Indeed, over and over again, Jesus invites us into a very different perspective on our enemies. In Matthew's gospel, Jesus tells us that not only are we to love our neighbors, but we are to love our enemies as well, and pray for those who persecute us. In Luke's account, Jesus tells us that not only should we love our enemies, but that we should do good to those who hate us, bless those who curse us, and pray for those who abuse us. I admit this is a very tall order. Loving our enemies sounds awfully nice as an abstract ideal, but as we reflect on Osama bin Laden's life and death, it becomes considerably more challenging. How can we love a man who did such horrific violence and who led others into such evil ways? What would such love even look like? I'm struggling with these questions too. But I think we can begin by recognizing his humanity, no matter how twisted and hurtful his deeds were. Like us, he was still human. We can give thanks that now he cannot command any more killing while refusing to celebrate his death. We can pray for his soul. Though the disciples were certainly not terrorists, we see Jesus enacting this surprising love with them in our gospel today. They were not his enemies, but they had betrayed him and abandoned him in his darkest hour. They scattered as he was handed over to the authorities. They hid while he was tortured. They were absent while he hung on the cross. Now, even after seeing the empty tomb and having heard from the women that Jesus had risen, the disciples are still running away. He comes to them, and they cannot see him. And yet, here he is, with wounds still gaping from the torture he endured without them. And he returns to them. To the ones who betrayed him, Jesus offers peace. Even before the disciples have figured out who this strange man is, they know that they need more time with him. On the walk, he has taught them in ways that they desperately needed, given them some glimmer of hope, and they need more. Rather than letting him wander off into the night, they strong-arm him into staying with them, warming up, getting a bite to eat. And as they sit down and break bread together, the pain still palpable between them, their eyes are opened. It's him, it's Jesus. Those women weren't hallucinating after all. They can hardly believe it, and yet they know it's true. Christ is risen. But then, just as soon as they've recognized him, he vanishes again. But this time, their hearts are burning, their energy has returned, and they run back to Jerusalem. They remember what Jesus has called them to do, and they realize that they can do it, even when he is not right at their side. They run back and begin to spread the good news. In breaking bread with Jesus, these disciples are reminded of his presence and of his call to them. And the same is true for us. In a little while, we will come to this table, and we too will break bread together. In the sacramental mystery that is the Eucharist, we too take part in this wonderful and perplexing presence. We can experience it even if we can't explain it. We are drawn together even with people who have hurt us and whom we have hurt, even with people whom we have betrayed and who have abandoned us. We gather in reconciliation, knowing that when our wounds are still fresh, as his were, we can still come together. And in the mystery of the Eucharist, we are also invited into a challenging space of loving our enemies. We are welcomed into a profound state of reconciliation, both with God and with our fellow humans. In this place, as we receive God's gift of reconciliation, we can pray that others may be reconciled to God as well. And yes, we can even pray that somehow, someday, Osama bin Laden will be reconciled to God. As inconceivable as it may be to us now, the bread we break at this table is only a foretaste of the banquet that is yet to come, a banquet to which God is drawing all of us, a feast at God's table where we all will sit down with our enemies, with those whom we have hurt, and with those who have hurt us, and perhaps even with Osama bin Laden. We may not understand it, we may not even be able to imagine such a feast of reconciliation today, and yet we still come forward with hands outstretched. And so, like the disciples, we come together again. Like the disciples, we come with a wild mix of emotions. We come to this table in our fear, in our relief, in our mourning, in our joy and wonder that Christ is indeed risen. We break bread together and we pray. And so, with words that we will sing while we share this simple meal today, we pray now that there be peace before us, peace behind us, peace under our feet, peace within us, peace over us. Let all around us be peace.